6 to 8 hours? Darby's legs nearly folded under her. She'd been half-standing, arched forward to listen, and now she slumped back into her chair like a rag doll. The rest of the room processed this information in hushed voices, swirling around her.
Is that right?
6 to 8 freaking hours?
All night, basically.
Better get comfy.
Sandy pouted and closed her tablet's leather case.
Figures. I'm already on the last level of Super Bubble Pop.
All night. Darby rocked in the cheap chair, her knuckles clasped around her knees. A strange sensation of alarm washed over her. A sluggish sort of horror, like what her mother might have felt when she found that first lump under her armpit. No panic, no fight, no flight. Just that shivery little moment when daily life goes rancid. It'll be all night until the snowplows get here.
Rodent Face cleared his throat. A juicy gurgle. And everyone glanced to him. He was still standing behind Darby's chair, still breathing down her neck. He addressed the entire room, his words slow and clotted.
I'm Lars.
Silence.
My...
He inhaled through his mouth.
My name is...
Lars. No one responded. Darby tensed, realizing this was likely the first time Ashley, Ed, and Sandy had heard him speak as well. The awkwardness was tangible. Ashley flashed his easy smile.
Thanks, Lars.
You know,
Lars swallowed, both hands in his jacket pockets.
Since we'll be, here a while, better make introductions. So, hello, my name is Lars.
And I'm probably the one with a kid locked in my van. Darby's mind raced, her thoughts fluttering out of control, her nerves writhing and sparking like live wires. And we're trapped here with you, in this tiny rest stop, all night.
Nice to meet you, said Ed. What are your thoughts on Apple products?
20 minutes of strategic small talk later, Darby had all of the parked vehicles matched to their drivers. The buried one belonged to Ashley. He'd been the first one here, having arrived sometime after 3 p.m. this afternoon, to find a deserted rest area with a murmuring radio and stale coffee. He'd been in no hurry to cross the pass and figured he'd play it safe. He was a college student, like herself. Salt Lake City Institute of Tech or something. Now that the ice was broken, he was an absolute chatterbox, with a Cheshire grin full of white teeth. Darby now knew he was planning a Vegas trip with his uncle to see some illusionist show. She knew he hated mushrooms but loved cilantro. Good Lord, could he talk.
And Ashley is still a perfectly good male name.
Uh-huh,
said Ed. The two older folks were more guarded. But Darby now knew the red F-150 was actually Sandy's, not Ed's, as she'd originally guessed. She was also surprised to learn they weren't even married, although they sure bickered enough to be. They were cousins, actually, and Sandy was driving them both to Denver to visit family for Christmas. A bit of an 11th-hour trip, by the sound of it. Ed had been in some sort of recent trouble. Since he didn't have a car, or, apparently, a steady job. Prison time? Maybe. He seemed to be something of a beached male. A 50-something man-child with an earring and a biker goatee. And Sandy seemed to love babying him. If only so she had an excuse to hate him. So Darby had eliminated 3 drivers and 2 vehicles. This left Lars. He hadn't spoken at all since he'd told them his name, so Darby couldn't get a firm idea of exactly when he'd arrived here.
but judging by the snowpack, she estimated maybe 30 minutes before Ed and Sandy. She watched Lars fill a styrofoam cup with cocoa and return to his sentry spot at the door, taking a childish slurp. She hadn't seen him sit down once. As she sipped her own drug of choice, coffee, Darby tried to plan her next moves. But there were too many unknowns. She couldn't involve Ed, Ashley, or Sandy. Not yet, because then she'd lose control of the situation. Involving other people had to be a last resort. She couldn't put the pin back in the grenade. Right here, right now, she had the element of surprise, and the worst thing she could possibly do was waste it. Still, her mind conjured worst-case scenarios. She imagined telling Ashley, the youngest and most physically able, that she suspected they were sharing oxygen with a child molester, and Ashley understandably blanching. Lars would notice this, yank a gun from his baby blue jacket, and kill them both. Ed and Sandy would be witnesses, so they'd die too. Four bullet-riddled bodies in a glossy pool of blood. All because Darby opened her mouth. And the flip side? What if there wasn't a child in Lars's van? What if I imagined it? What if she'd seen a plastic doll hand, a dog paw, a kid's empty glove? It wouldn't explain the bars or the combination lock, but still, it could have all been her tortured imagination, a trick of light and shadow, and it had only lasted a few seconds anyway. Her mind swirled a little. She'd been certain 30 minutes ago, but suddenly her conviction disappeared. She could imagine a dozen more probable scenarios than this one. What were the odds of stumbling across a kidnapping in progress? Walt trapped overnight in a snowy rest stop. It was all too fantastical to be a part of Darby's life. She tried to mentally reconstruct the scene, step by step. The van's rear window had been frosted with ice. The interior had been dark. And Darby herself? She was a wreck. Anxious, sleep-deprived, her blood surging with Red Bull, glimpsing starbursts behind her own dry eyelids. What if this was just her vivid imagination at work, and Lars was just an innocent traveler like the others? Attacking him would be a battery charge. If I'm wrong about this... She finished her last gulp of coffee, and for some reason, her mind darted to her older sister, 23-year-old Devin, who had her first tattoo etched on her right shoulder blade. A few Chinese characters, bold and elegantly drawn. They translated to strength in Chinese. The lesson there? Double-check everything. She needed to go back outside to the van. She needed to see this child, really see this child. And she couldn't rush to action. She had plenty of time. She had 6 to 8 hours of it, in fact. Enough time to think. And she needed to be certain before making her move. Right? Right. She rubbed the goosebumps on her arms and scanned the room. At the table, they'd finished Go Fish. Ashley was now trying to convince Ed to play a new card game called War. Sandy had plucked a yellowed paperback from her purse and raised it like a defensive wall. And Lars, the star of tonight's nightmare, was still guarding the front door, sipping his styrofoam cup of cocoa. She'd been counting. This was his third refill. He'd be hitting the restroom soon. That's when, she decided. That was when she'd slip outside. Last time, she'd stumbled into the scene, off guard and frightened. This time, she'd be ready. Ashley riffled the cards, having given up on Ed, and nodded at Sandy's paperback. "What are you reading?" she grunted.
"A murder mystery."
"I like murder mysteries," he hesitated. "Well, actually, to be honest, I don't read much. I guess I just like the idea of murder mysteries." Sandy forced a polite smile, turning a page. Why'd you ask, then? It was barely 2 hours into Darby's stay at the Wanapah rest area, and she was already getting annoyed at Ashley. He was a talker, all right. And he was still going like a wind-up toy, his hooks latched into Sandy.
How many chapters in are you?
Not many.
Has the victim been murdered yet?
Yep.
I like gore. Was it gory?
Ed stirred uncomfortably, and his chair croaked. He watched Sandy, who was turning another page, and hadn't even answered Ashley's first question when he pelted her with another.
Can you guess who the murderer is?
Not yet, she said dryly. That's the point.
It's always the nice guy, Ashley said. Again, I don't really read, but I've seen a lot of movies, and that's even better. Whoever seems like the nicest character, at first, will always turn out to be the asshole in the end.
Sandy ignored him. Please stop talking, Darby thought. Just stop.
That truck, he continued, glancing out the window. That's yours, right?
Mm-hmm.
Reminds me of a joke. What does Ford stand for?
I don't know.
Found on road dead.
Sandy grunted and kept reading. Finally, Ashley took the hint.
Sorry, I'll let you read.
Lars watched this interaction from the door. He licked his lips, and Darby was struck by how small his teeth were. Just two little rows of stunted kernels, like baby teeth. Half-formed, still encased in pink gums. He gulped the last of his cocoa and threw his empty styrofoam cup at the garbage can, missing by 3 full feet. No one commented on this. Not even Ashley. Darby watched the white cup twirl on the tile and considered, assuming her suspicions were confirmed. Maybe she'd be able to break into Lars's van and quietly move the child into her Honda. Hide him or her in the back seat, perhaps? Under the heap of butcher paper she used for her gravestone rubbings. Or better yet, the trunk. If there was enough oxygen and heat. When the snowplows arrived early tomorrow morning, everyone could go their separate ways, and Lars might drive away without even realizing his prey had escaped. No, that was wishful thinking. Since they'd be stranded here all night, Lars would have to run his engine periodically to keep the child warm. He would notice his captive had disappeared. She took in a rattling breath. She counted to 5 before letting it out, just as her mother once taught her. Right now, the advantage is mine. I can't waste it. She wished it could be someone else in this situation. Someone smarter, braver, steadier, more capable. Someone from her college's ROTC program. One of those sweaty girls in urban digital camouflage, lugging heavy rucksacks up and down campus. Someone who knew jiu-jitsu. Hell, anyone else. But it was just her. Just Darby Thorne. The weird girl who hid from parties inside a dorm room wallpapered with black crayon rubbings stolen from strangers' graves. Like some kind of spiritual vampire. As the snowstorm intensified outside, she swiped her iPhone and quickly typed another text. Just a draft message. Just a backup, in the event of the unthinkable. But it brought tears to her eyes all the same. Mom, if you find this message on my phone, something happened to me. I'm trapped overnight at a rest stop as I write this, and one of the people here might be dangerous. I hope I'm just being paranoid, but if I'm not, just know that I'm sorry for everything. All the things I said and did to you. I'm sorry about our phone call on Thanksgiving. You don't deserve any of that, Mom. I love you so much, and I'm so sorry. Love, your daughter. 15 minutes later, Lars went to the restroom. He passed by Darby's chair, and she noticed something strange. He'd peeled his black ski gloves off, exposing the pale skin on the back of his left hand. It was peppered with tiny raised bumps, like mosquito bites, or maybe scar tissue, though she couldn't imagine what grisly tool could do that to a human hand, short of a cheese grater. Then Lars shuffled past and vanished into the men's restroom. The door swished shut, taking forever before finally clicking. "Now." Darby scooted her chair out and stood up on quivering knees. Ed and Ashley glanced up at her. This was her chance, her 30-second window to sneak outside and confirm the unthinkable. Her phone in her hand, she moved to the front door, her lungs swelling with held breath. But on the way, she surprised herself. She did something utterly illogical. She approached the second carafe, labeled Coco, and quickly refilled her 8-ounce styrofoam cup. She didn't even like hot chocolate. But kids do, right? She heard a urinal flush. Lars was coming back. Hurrying now, she sipped the warm drink while she crossed back to the front doorway and tugged the door open, aware that Ashley was still watching her.
"Yo, Darbs, where are you going?"
Darbs. She hadn't been called that since 5th grade. "Trying again to get a cell signal. My mom's got pancreatic cancer and she's in a hospital in Provo." Without giving Ashley time to respond, she stepped outside into the howling storm, flinching against a wall of bone-chilling air, and recalled an offhand little saying she'd heard once from her mother. "The easiest lies to tell are the true ones." Night, 9:25 p.m. Darby walked to the Nightmare Children first. This was part of her plan. It would be suspicious to beeline straight for the cars, and she had to assume Lars would look out the window after he exited the restroom and found her not there. Plus, she was leaving tracks in the snow. She recognized her own from an hour ago, and Ashley's, and Lars's. Her size 8 shoes were so much smaller than theirs, all filling with snowflakes. Tonight, every decision would leave footprints. As for decisions, the hot chocolate had been a dumb one. About as dumb as Devin's strength in Chinese tattoo. She didn't know why she'd taken the time to pour a drink while a possible child predator took a leak one room over. She just did it. She'd burnt her tongue when she sipped it on her way outside. Like a real badass. She circled the chewed-up statues and then looped back around the visitor center. The building teetered by the cliff's edge, just a narrow precipice behind a cement foundation wall, made narrower by stacked picnic tables. On the building's back wall, she spotted 2 more windows, one for each restroom. They were small and rectangular, about 10 feet off the ground, nestled under the icicled overhang of the roof. She was certain Lars was finished in there already. She'd heard the urinal flush minutes ago. But she moved quietly, just in case. She walked uphill, still play-acting the role of girl without cell service. Of course, her iPhone detected nothing. She tried resending her 911 text message every few paces, but it never took. Her battery was now 4%. From up here, she could survey the entire rest area, laid out like a diorama. Wanapa, little devil, in the local tongue. The stout little building, the flagpole, the cedar trunk, the nightmare children, the huddle of snowbound cars. Particularly, she watched the visitor center's front door, waiting for Lars to step outside under the orange glow of the sodium vapor lamp, waiting to see if he'd follow her trail. The door didn't open, No sign of Rodent Face. Melanie's peak towered to the left, a sloping shadow. The intensifying snowfall had obscured most of it, but it was still the tallest mountain within view. It would be a useful landmark for navigation. From this vantage point, she could also see State Route 7, bathed in circles of overhead lights. It looked like a giant ski ramp, glittering with fresh powder, utterly impassable for everything here except, maybe, Sandy's truck. Blue wouldn't make it 5 feet up, or down, that. She waited there with snowflakes in her hair, listening to the distant gusts of high-altitude wind. Between them, a bleak silence. And in it, Darby's own tortured thoughts ran wild, like an echo chamber. You're the reason Dad left, and if I could have chosen him instead of you, I would have, in a heartbeat. In a fucking heartbeat, Maya. Before hanging up, her mother had answered, If he really wanted you, Darby, he would have taken you. She sipped her hot cocoa again. Lukewarm. Now that she was certain Lars wasn't following her, she could finally approach his van. She crossed the exit ramp and came at it from the north, her eyes never leaving Wanapa's front facade. From the interior window, you could see the van's right side, but not the left, and she had to assume Lars would be keeping an eye out. Walking in the deep snow was exhausting. She clambered and panted, spilling her drink. The air was abrasive on her throat. Her nose burnt. She felt the moisture freeze on her eyelashes, turning them crunchy. Strangely, though, her body itself didn't feel cold. Her blood was hot with adrenaline. She felt radioactive. She didn't even have gloves, but she felt like she could spend all night out here. Crossing the section of the parking lot designated for RVs and semi-trucks, she was close enough now to the building that she could discern seated figures through the smudged glass. She saw Ashley's shoulder, the top of Ed's balding head. No sign of Lars, though, which suddenly worried her. What if he'd followed her outside after all? What if he'd just exited the building when she was behind it, and he was tracking her footprints right now, creeping behind her in the darkness? She couldn't decide what was scarier, seeing Rodent Face or not seeing him. Her hot chocolate would soon freeze in its cup. She kept moving toward that mysterious van, and the stupid cartoon fox floated closer with every lurching step. That slogan, "We finish what we start." The powder on the parking lot was shallower, only ankle-deep, under a skin of ice. It had been plowed within the last 24 hours, which was reassuring. Approaching from the left, she used the van's long side as cover. She approached the van's rear doors, a Chevrolet Astro. She assumed AWD stood for all-wheel drive. An older model, judging by the hard wear, dirty scrapes on the bumper, charcoal gray paint peeling off in crunchy blisters. To the right, she recognized the faint outline of her own footprints from an hour ago, passing between the van and her Honda, and pausing right here. This was where it happened. This was where her night took a hard turn. And now, this was her moment of truth. She set her styrofoam cup in the snow and leaned up to the Astro's rectangular black windows, half obscured with knives of creeping frost. She cupped her hands to the glass again and peered inside. It was even darker than she'd remembered. No shapes, no movement, just murky blackness, like looking into a stranger's closet. She tapped the glass with two fingers. Hey. No answer. Hey, is someone in there? It was strange to be talking to a van. Nothing. Only Darby Thorne, standing out here like a car prowler, feeling more and more awkward with every passing second. She considered using the LED flashlight on her iPhone, but it would consume her battery and, worse, be as bright as a supernova. If Lars happened to be facing the window, he'd definitely see it. She rapped the metal door twice with her knuckle, just above the California license plate, and waited for a response. No activity inside. Nothing at all. I imagined it. She stepped back from the door, sucking in a cold breath. Listen up, she hissed, her voice hoarse. If there's someone trapped in there, make a noise right now, or I'm leaving. This is your last chance. Still no answer. Darby counted to 20. I imagined that little hand. That's what happened. Now, in the luxury of hindsight, she knew exactly why she'd taken the time to fill a cup of hot chocolate back in the visitor center. It was her own form of denial. She'd done the same thing after Devin had texted last night with a message that imploded her world. Call me. Mom has cancer. The first thing she'd done, she'd set her phone down, slipped on a jacket, and then walked from Dryden Hall to the Student Union building and ordered a cheeseburger. She'd watched it come to her, greasy and squashed, paid $5.63 with a crumpled 10, found a seat in the deserted cafeteria, and took two half-hearted bites before bolting to the restroom and vomiting. She'd called Devin right there in the stall, her elbows on bleached porcelain, her cheeks burning with tears. There's refuge in normalcy, if you can hold on to it. Outside Lars's van, she kept counting. By now she'd reached 50, and still no sign of this imaginary child. It made sense, right? The same way perfectly rational people swear to see red lights in the sky, or phantoms in mirrors, or Bigfoot in national parks. Darby Thorne had just imagined a child's hand inside a stranger's car, and nearly taken serious and violent action on that half-glimpsed mirage. Too much caffeine, not enough sleep. This wasn't a movie. This was just real life. And this was all just a misunderstanding, a false alarm. And Darby suddenly couldn't wait to return to that stuffy little visitor center. Now the company didn't seem so bad at all. She'd try and play cards with Ashley, maybe chat with Ed and Sandy, perhaps doze off on the bench until CDOT updated their emergency frequency with more weather details. Because Lars wasn't a kidnapper after all. He was a creep with a stutter and a bumpy skin condition on his hands, sure. But the world was brimming with creeps. Most were harmless. Since the owner of this Astro likely was, too, she regained some courage and pressed her phone to the van's back window and engaged her LED flashlight, triggering a wash of blinding blue-white, just to put the last of her suspicions to rest, to finally confirm there was nothing. Behind the glass, she saw a little girl's face staring back at her. Darby dropped her phone. The LED light landed sideways at her feet, facing the Wanapah Visitor Center like a beacon, throwing jagged shadows in the snow. She dove for it, covering it with her cupped hands and fumbling for the button. Stillness in the van again. The girl had retreated back into the darkness. And again, Darby had only glimpsed her. But in the harsh flash, the afterimage was scorched into her retinas, like staring into the sun. Details lingered. The oval shape of her face, maybe 6 or 7 years old, with matted hair, wide eyes flinching at the brightness, dark tape clamped cruelly around her mouth, shiny with dripped snot. She was behind something metallic and gridded, like a black wire cage. as she'd initially suspected. A dog crate. Oh my God. Her mouth is duct-taped shut, and she's stuffed inside a dog crate. For the first time since she'd stepped outside, Darby shivered. All of the heat seemed to leave her body in a single, bracing instant. It was all confirmed. It was all true. It was all exactly as she'd suspected. It was all really happening right now in vivid color. A little girl's life was really on the line. And tonight's title match would be between a sleep-deprived art student and a human predator. She stood again. Stupidly, she retried the Astro's rear door. Still locked. She knew this already. She went for the driver door next. She wasn't thinking. She was acting on instinct. Just reflexes. Raw nerves. She was going to break into Rodentface's van. She was going to get this little girl the hell out of there. And hide her in her Honda. The trunk, maybe. She'd be safe in there, right? Breaking glass would be loud and would leave evidence. Instead, Darby peered through the driver window. The Astro's interior was cluttered with receipts on the dashboard and yellow burger wrappers on the seats. The cup holders bulged with Lars's empty big gulps. She swept away fresh powder and searched for the door's lock pin behind the icy glass. Yes, there it was. Thank God for old cars. Darby, think this through. She crouched and ripped the white shoelace from her right shoe. Gritting her teeth, she tied a slip knot down the middle, drew it tight, like a miniature lasso. She'd only done this once before. Darby, stop. No way. She palmed more snow off the top of the door, dropping scabs of ice, and pressed her shoelace into the upper corner. With her fingertips, she gripped the metal and pulled, just enough to relieve the pressure between the door and its frame, just a millimeter or two. After 30 seconds of fidgeting, the lace slipped right through and dangled behind the glass. Stop. She couldn't. She fed the shoelace in careful inches, lowering the loop to the lock. And something miraculous happened. The lasso dropped onto the pin and encircled it on her first try. This was the hardest part, the part that had taken 45 frustrating minutes last time. But amazingly, Darby had it here on her very first attempt. This was a promising omen, like God was on her side. She sure hoped he was. Tonight, she'd need all the help she could get. Her better judgment was still protesting. Darby, don't be impulsive. After you break her out, then what? You can't take her inside. You can't hide her in Blue's trunk all night. First, take a step back. Nope. All she could think about was that little girl. That terrified little face. Still, flash burnt onto her mind. Think this through. She repositioned left, sliding along the door's perimeter, and tugged the shoelace horizontal. The slipknot tightened around the lock, like a noose squeezing a neck. Then she repositioned vertically, adjusted her grip, and tugged a little harder. Too hard, and she'd lose her grip on the pin and have to start over. And a little harder, and harder still, and the shoelace quivered with sweaty tension, and the pin creaked, and now she was committed and couldn't stop. Darby, you're going to die tonight. Click. The door unlocked. Her heartbeat accelerating, Darby grabbed the door handle and wrenched it open. And to her horror, the Astro's dome light kicked on. A glaring brightness. Larson Garver saw a light outside. He was slouching by the brochure rack, studying the Colorado Air pamphlet, and trying to tell if their Robinson turbine copter was an R-66 or an R-44, when he noticed it, glimmering at the edge of his peripheral vision, a soundless little flash from the parked cars, reflected backwards on the window. From his van. He felt a knot of panic tighten in his gut. The rest of the room was oblivious. Ashley and Ed's card game continued, their voices a gentle back and forth.
Nine of diamonds? Ah, you got me.
Lars held his breath. His angle on the unknown light outside wasn't good enough. It could just be a reflection on the glass. So he stuffed the Colorado Air brochure into his pocket, where it would join Springs Scenic, a Cessna 172, and Rocky Vistas, a DHC-3 Otter, and he hurried to the paneled window, craning his neck for a clearer view. Darby found the dome light button and punched it off. Darkness again.
Holy shit,
she gasped, her heart thudding, her eardrums ringing, full of blood. That had been stupid, reckless, dangerous. She'd acted without thinking and allowed herself to be ambushed by a door-activated light bulb. Still, no one had seen it. No harm, no foul. Right? Right? The van smelled like stale sweat. It reminded her of a gym locker room. The leather seat cover was clammy under her fingers. A model airplane on the dashboard. The floor was a sea of crumpled yellow Jack-in-the-Box and Taco Bell bags, slimy and transparent with congealed grease. She groped for the center console and opened it. More bulging trash. She'd been hoping for a handgun or something. She wanted to try the glove box, but she knew there'd be another light bulb in there, ready to go off like a tripwire. She couldn't risk that again. Inside the door panel, she found the interior locks. Click, click. The Astro's rear doors were now unlocked. The cab was separated from the cargo bay with a metal screen, like a Catholic confessional. So carefully, she scooted back outside, retrieved her shoelace slipknot, thumbed the lock pin, and gently shut the driver door with her palms. She could see the building's window over the van's hood. She dreaded seeing Lars silhouetted behind the glass, investigating the dome light. But the window was still empty. Just the top of Ed's head and part of Ashley's shoulder, as Go Fish continued. So far, so good. Darby crept back along the van's left side, retracing her steps past the stupid cartoon fox, clambering through heaped snow. She stuffed her shoelace into her jeans pocket. No time to relace her shoe right now. She circled the back of the Astro, grabbed the left door handle, and tugged it open. The girl was inside a dog cage, one of those black, wire-grate ones that can be collapsed for flat storage. This one was sized for a collie, reinforced with a padlock and dozens of knotted zip ties. She was hunched on her knees because there wasn't enough room to stand. Her tiny fingers gripped the wire bars like a jail cell. Duct tape was looped around her mouth in clumsy twists. Darby smelled a damp sourness. Urine. For a long moment, she couldn't speak. What could you possibly say? There were no words for this situation. Like swallowing a mouthful of peanut butter, she finally managed to move her lips and say, "Hi." The girl stared at her with wide eyes. "Are you okay?" She shook her head. "Well, no shit." "I'm..." Darby shivered under a gust of chilling wind, realizing she hadn't planned this far ahead. "Okay, I'm going to take the duct tape off your face so you can talk to me. Is that all right?" The girl nodded. "It might hurt." The girl nodded harder. Darby knew it would hurt. It was gummed up into her hair. Lars had wrapped it lazily around her head, and it was the black electrical kind. She reached through the gaps in the dog kennel and found the tape's seams with her fingernails. Carefully, she peeled off the first loop, and then the second, and as the little girl worked the rest, Darby asked,
What's your name?
Jay.
Do you know the man who drives this van?
No.
Did he take you?
Yeah.
From your house? Darby rephrased. Wait, okay, Jay, where do you live?
1145 Fairbridge Way.
Where is that?
By Costco.
No, what's the name of the city you live in?
San Diego.
This made Darby shudder. She'd never driven to the West Coast before. Lars must have been on the highway for days, with this girl penned up in the back. That explained the fast food trash. She glimpsed more of the van's interior as her pupils adjusted to the darkness. Blankets and rugs heaped to cover the cage. Plywood shelving on the walls, all empty. Coca-Cola bottles, the glass kind, jangling on the metal floor. Loose sawdust, nails. A red gas can with a black spout. Children's clothing bundled up in white Kmart bags. Although Darby doubted Lars had changed Jay once since he'd abducted her from her hometown. All the way in Southern California.
Right by the Costco,
Jay clarified. Darby noticed a circular logo on the girl's shirt and recognized it. The ball-shaped device from the Pokemon games. A Pokeball, she remembered, from the iPhone app that had briefly taken CU Boulder's campus by storm. What's your last name?
Nissen.
Is... Darby rattled the circular padlock, securing the kennel door. Is Jay short for something?
Jaybird?
No, a longer name, like Jessica.
Just Jay,
the girl said. Jay Nissen, age 7, reported missing in San Diego. The realization crept up on Darby. This would be on the news. She'd just broken into a man's car, already technically a crime, and decisions were being made right now, which would later be recited to a courtroom. Attorneys would nitpick the minute-to-minute details. If she survived, she would have to answer for every single choice she'd made, good and bad. And thus far, all she'd really accomplished was asking the kidnapped girl with her mouth duct-taped shut if she was okay. Darby had always been awful at speaking to children. Even back to her babysitting days, she'd lacked that maternal instinct. Kids were just messy, belligerent little creatures that stressed her out. She'd often wondered how her own mother could have handled her, especially since she'd been unplanned. Her elder sister, Devon, had been deliberate, of course, the darling firstborn. But then 3 years later, along came baby Darby, in the wake of a shattering marital split. Divorce paperwork, late rent, and a side of morning sickness. I thought you were the stomach flu, her mother told her once with a crooked grin. Darby never quite knew how to feel about this. I thought you were the flu. I tried to kill you with Theraflu. Now this little abducted girl raised her other hand to grip the kennel, and Darby realized it was bandaged. Jay's palm was wrapped and sealed with more loops of sloppy electrical tape. Too dark to make out details. Darby touched it, and Jay flinched away sharply. Did he hurt you?
Yeah.
Her gut stirred with rage. She couldn't believe it. How much worse this night seemed to get with each passing second. But she steadied her voice and asked through chattering teeth, What did he do to your hand, Jay?
It's called... A yellow card.
A yellow card? The girl nodded. Darby's mind fluttered. Like in soccer? Jay lowered her injured hand and leaned back, creaking the kennel. And Darby felt something crusty coating the wire bars. It flaked off under her fingernails, smelling coppery. Scales of dried blood. A yellow card. That's the kind of psycho I'm up against. 50 feet away, The building's front door opened and then banged shut. Jay froze. Approaching footsteps, coming fast. Ice crunching under treaded boots. Darby hesitated there where she stood, leaning into the back of the child abductor's Chevrolet Astro, half in, half out, afraid to move, afraid to stay. Paralyzed by building terror, she looked into the little girl's wide eyes as the footsteps stomped closer in the darkness. And another sound, fast approaching. Mouth breathing. 9:39 p.m. Run or hide? As Lars approached his van, Darby chose hide. She scooted all the way inside the vehicle, tucking her knees inside and gently closing the rear door behind her. But it shut on a towel. His footsteps crunched closer. Shit! She tugged the towel inside and eased the door shut. It clicked home. She was now sealed inside the Predator's van, wedged between the rear door and Jay's dog kennel. She sunk as low to the floor as she could, contorting to fit the cramped space, and covered herself with heaped blankets and scratchy rugs. Coca-Cola bottles jangled underneath her, the musty odor of dog blankets, her forehead pressed to the cold metal door. Her right elbow squished crookedly behind her back. She fought to control her breathing, to keep her panicked gulps of air silent. Inhale, count to five, exhale. Inhale, count to five, exhale. Inhale, count to... Now she heard Rodent Face's footsteps circle the vehicle's right side. Past the nail-gun-wielding cartoon fox... Past the "we finish what we start" motto, passing between his van and her own Honda. She tasted a seasick mix of fright and vindication. If she'd chosen run instead of hide, he would have certainly spotted her. He kept coming, wheezing softly between his two small teeth, and she saw his silhouette pass the rear window over her head. He paused there, glancing inside. 12 inches away from her, his breath fogging on the glass. Darby held hers. If he opens that door, I'm dead. But he didn't. He kept walking, completing a full circle around the van, and came up to the driver door. Grabbed the handle. Darby heard the door screech on bad hinges, and the vehicle sank on its suspension as a third human body lurched inside. The jingle of car keys on his red lanyard. With one eye uncovered, careful not to disturb the glass bottles underneath her, Darby glanced over at Jay inside her dog kennel and raised one trembling finger to her lips. "Shh." Jay nodded. In the driver's seat, Lars sniffled, leaned forward, and clicked a key into the ignition. But he didn't turn it. Darby heard a long, thoughtful pull of breath. Then silence. Too much silence. Something is wrong. She waited, her eardrums ringing with building pressure, gut muscles clenched. A breath held in swollen lungs. Rodent Face was a dark form at the wheel, separated by a caged divider and silhouetted against the opaque snow on the windshield. With her one uncovered eye, Darby could see that his head was turned sideways. He was looking up and to his right at the Astro's dome light. The dome light she'd switched off. Oh, no. She could imagine the thoughts inching through his brain. He was wondering why the light bulb didn't click on automatically when he opened the driver door, as it usually did. Now, what did that suggest? That someone else had entered his van, that, upon closer examination of the mixed footprints outside, someone was still inside his van, buried in the back under a musty Navajo rug, sweating and trembling with nerve-shredding panic. Lars twisted the key.
The engine turned over smoothly, and Darby exhaled with relief. He hunched forward in his seat and angled the air vents, clicked the heater dial to full blast, set his Deadpool beanie on the dashboard beside his model airplane, crinkling a fast food wrapper. Darby heard movement beside her. It was Jay, quietly rewrapping the electrical tape around her mouth. Smart girl, she thought. The next 20 minutes felt like hours, as the van slowly filled with heat and moisture. Lars idled the engine and scanned radio stations. He found only different flavors of garbled static. Then repeating robo-voice of that CDOT transmission, and once again, Bing Crosby's goddamn White Christmas. I can't escape that song, Darby thought. It'll probably play at my funeral. She'd always imagined that they would have invented flying cars by then. Now, slumped in a kidnapper's humid van, breathing through her nose, she wasn't so sure. Naturally, Lars listened to the entire song, which meant Darby had to as well. Listening to the lyrics made her appreciate it a bit more. She'd always just assumed it was about snow, but there was a homesickness and longing to it. As Bing Crosby crooned, she imagined some poor farm boy just out of high school, hunkered in frozen foreign dirt, fighting someone else's war, dreaming of loved ones back home. She could relate to that part. Lars probably wasn't thinking quite as deeply about it. He munched a Baby Ruth bar, chewing loudly. He picked his nose and studied his findings in the glow of the dash. Farted twice. The second one made him giggle. And then he suddenly turned around and grinned at the back of the van, with a mouthful of small, pointy teeth. And Darby's chest tightened, her heart a clenched fist.
"Warmed it up for you," he said.
He was looking at Jay's kennel in the darkness, but he had no idea he was also looking directly at Darby. Just a layer of fabric covering her, and one exposed eye. All it would take was a little more light. "He's looking right at me." Rodent-Face's grin vanished. He kept staring. "Oh, God, he can see me," Darby thought, her sides cramping, feeling spiders crawling on her skin. "His eyes are adjusting to the dark, and now he knows I'm in here, and oh, my God, he's going to kill me." He farted a third time. Or that, I guess. This was a long one, a blaring honk, and then he exploded into hard laughter. He screamed his laugh, punching the passenger seat. He was immensely pleased with himself, barely choking out words to his captive.
You're welcome for that cheek rumbler. Nice and warm, huh, Jaybird?
Darby heard Jay's electrical tape crease as her head tilted slightly. She imagined the girl making a, "See what I've been dealing with?" eye roll. Then Lars's belly laughs morphed into coughs. They were wet, bubbly, like he was nursing a sinus infection. That explained the mouth breathing. Darby's feet were pressed up against the 5-gallon gas can she'd seen before, and beside it, she now noticed a second white jug, a Clorox logo, barely visible in the dashboard light. Bleach. Probably. 5 gallons of gasoline and bleach. Materials to clean up a crime scene, maybe? After the radio cycled through a few more holiday songs, Grandma Got Run Over by a Reindeer, which he sang along to, and Silent Night, which he didn't, Lars cut the Astro's engine and stuffed the keys into his jacket pocket. By now, the van was an 80-degree sweatbox. The windows steamed with condensation. Beads of dewy lamplight sparkled on the glass. Trapped under that smothering blanket, the perspiration and melted snow had turned Darby's skin clammy, her sleeves stuck to her wrists, and underneath it, her art walk hoodie was soaked with dread sweat. Lars scooted outside, slipped his Deadpool beanie back over his scalp, and glanced back at the dome light. He was still mildly perplexed by that detail, but then he turned around, ripped ass one final, emphatic time into the cab, fanned it with the door, sealed Jay and Darby inside with it, and left. Darby listened to his footsteps fade. Then, distantly, she heard the visitor center's front door open and shut with a dim clap. Silence. Jay peeled the electrical tape off her mouth.
"He farts a lot,"
I noticed.
"I think it's the burgers."
Darby threw the bristly blanket off her shoulders, wiping damp tangles of hair from her face. She kicked open the Astro's rear door and climbed back outside. It felt like escaping a sauna. Her Converse were soaked, her socks grossly squishy inside them, and her right shoe was still missing a shoelace.
"He puts ranch sauce on everything," Jay continued. "He asks the drive-thru for a cup of it to dip his fries in, but that's a lie. He just pours it on."
"Right." Darby wasn't listening. The sub-zero chill was invigorating, like shedding 50 pounds of sweaters. She felt agile and alive again. She knew what she had to do. She just didn't know how the hell she was going to do it. She stepped back, raised her iPhone, and snapped two quick photos. Jay didn't blink, her blood-stained fingers on the kennel bars.
"Be careful."
"I will."
"Promise you'll be careful."
"I promise." The girl extended her unhurt hand to Darby. At first, she thought it was a handshake, or a pinky swear, or some other half-remembered artifact from her own childhood. But then Jay dropped something into Darby's palm. Something small, metallic, as cold as an ice cube. It was a bullet.
"I found it on the floor," Jay whispered.
It was lighter than Darby would have guessed, like a blunt little torpedo. She rolled it left to right on her skin. Her palm was shaking. She almost dropped it. This wasn't a surprise exactly, but just a grim confirmation of her worst-case scenario. Of course, Lars has a gun. Of course. She should have guessed. This was America, where cops and robbers carry guns. Where, as the NRA tells us, the only thing that stops a bad guy with a gun is a good guy with a gun. Hokey, but true as hell. She'd never even handled a firearm before, let alone shot one. But she'd sell her soul to have one right now. She realized Jay was still looking at her. Usually, she hated talking to kids. Whenever she was trapped with her nieces or her friends' younger siblings, she'd always treated them like smaller, dumber adults. But now it came easy. She didn't need to mince words. She meant every bit of it. And rewording it would only dilute its simple power. "Jay, I promise I will get you out of here. I will save you." 10:41 p.m. Darby hadn't seen her father in 11 years, but as a high school graduation gift 2 years ago, he'd mailed her a multi-tool. The funny part? The drugstore Hallmark card congratulated her for graduating college. Oops, huh? But as gifts go, it wasn't bad. It was one of those red Swiss Army variants that unfolded in a fan. Corkscrew, clippers, nail file, and of course, a 2-inch serrated blade. She'd only used it once, to help open the blister package encasing her roommate's new earbuds, and then she'd forgotten about it for the rest of her college career. She kept it in Blue's glove box. It was in her back pocket now, like a prison shiv. She was seated on the stone